You're listening to Creative Thursday, episode number 196.
Welcome to Creative Thursday with Marisa Ann Cummings. We're talking all things life, business, and creativity intended to inspire and empower you wherever you are on your creative journey, both personally and professionally. Thank you for listening.
Hi, hello, it's Marisa here. Happy Creative Thursday. Back with another episode for you from season two. We are officially halfway through, and I am bringing you our fourth episode today, introducing you to our special guest, Robert Mahar. So let me tell you, if we are going to talk about online pioneers, it is Robert Mahar. If you are excited to learn from someone who has years of experience working in all kinds of different mediums, we talk about what it means to be a generalist, which I now also proudly call myself a generalist, and no, it is not someone in the military. And we just talk through a conversation filled with wisdom with two people who have seen a lot of different sides to running a business in this online space from the very early days until the days that I am coming to you that are just quite extraordinary, especially here in California. So I'm going to keep this intro extra short and sweet. My neighbors are having a pool put in, and so I'm squeezing in my recording time at mere moments when there is not any jackhammering happening to save your ears. So this will keep me more efficient and just share with you a quick bit of background to Robert. He is an artist and a designer, and his specialty is teaching you imaginative DIY projects through video tutorials. Yes, that's right. You will have so much fun if you just visit Robert's YouTube channel, Crafted with Robert Mahar. He has also taught on Blueprint, which was formerly Craftsy, and Creative Live, and he is a talent who's been part of the Kin community. And most recently, we had to keep this top secret while we were recording this episode. He was a contestant, do we call it a contestant? A very talented contestant on Making It. And recently they just did a series as well called Making It at Home with Nick Offerman and Amy Poehler hosting. And it was so exciting to watch Robert on those first few episodes. Does Robert crush it in the DIY space? Yeah, he does. He most definitely does. A Midwesterner at heart, Robert has been in LA for more than 25 years, and he has a background in studio arts and art history. And I found out in this episode for the very first time what his first career was before he came to the online space. And he is also, let's just say, obsessed. Those are his words. And my words, a vintage connoisseur, aka vintage obsessed. He is truly a multi-passionate, super talented human. And not to mention one of the kindest, loveliest people I've had the pleasure of meeting through this incredible online space that we are all a part of. I just cannot give enough shout outs to Robert, truly. And full disclosure, this was actually my very last episode that I filmed. I have placed it here in position 4 for a couple of reasons I'll share with you on the other side. But yes, I did have yet another technical glitch in finalizing these episodes, but it's okay. No complaints. Just looking forward to bringing you the final two, and really, really thrilled to introduce you to Robert if you don't already know him. I am titling this episode A Message from Robert, and that is Make It Your Own. Such an important message in today's world, in today's time, where it can feel like, oh my goodness, how will I ever stand out? How will I ever be seen or heard? And the best guidance truly is a lot of what Robert shares here in this episode, and also simply just to remember you're unique. And the best way that you can stand out and to carve a space for yourself in this world is to truly make it your own. All right, friends, I hope you are all doing well and staying well and healthy. I am always thinking of you, wishing you more creativity in every day, and excited to share a conversation with Robert Mahar. Enjoy. Oh, and I hope I've reminded you in every one of these episodes, you can see the episode, you can see our conversation and see Robert's beautiful work over at youtube.com/Creative Thursday. I love that you referred to yourself as a generalist.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that I know about you and admire about you is your ability to be so good at many different mediums.
Thank you.
I was wondering if you would open with how you've become what a generalist is, not someone in the military, but how you've become, or how you would define that, and how that's
how I've come about. To accept that.
Yeah, come to accept it.
Yeah, because, you know, I went to art school, and I almost did two undergraduate degrees. I did 3 years at one college, took a few years off, and then finished up USC. And my first attempted undergrad, if you will, was all studio arts. And they really, at the school I went to, they really kind of drilled into us that you need to start thinking about what your area of concentration is going to be. Are you going to be a painter? Are you going to be a printmaker? Are you going to be a sculptor? And I really struggled with that, you know, because you put me in an art supply store and it's like a kid in a candy shop, and I just am very sort of like fragmented my attention is as to what I want to get my hands on and make. I did at the time end up focusing on sculpture because that seemed to encompass so many different mediums. If I wanted to paint on something that was three-dimensional, I could. If I wanted to add a printed element and collage it onto it, like, that was acceptable.
So you worked the system is what you're saying.
Well, you know, I was experimenting. I was trying to figure it out. And then, you know, I had some sort of epiphany that I had enough starving artist friends and I would switch to the lucrative field of fine art, or of art history, which, you know, really is ridiculous. And as the years have passed and I've spent more time working, I really have just come to the understanding that I am a generalist. I don't have a specific area of concentration. I think there are mediums maybe that feel more comfortable to me. Like, I love paper arts. And that always feels like home to me to a certain extent. But at the same time, I'm happy to delve into sort of a fiber arts project or something that involves sewing and cloth, or, you know, a little bit of woodworking.
How would you define paper arts?
See, it's super broad. It is...
would be your favorite within paper arts?
Well, I mean, I think my sort of... my intro into it, sort of my area of interest that kind of pushed me in that direction was vintage crepe paper florals. Like, I loved that.
And how did you discover that?
Well, a lot of what I like to do is sort of dig into vintage craft books or hobby books or rainy day activity books from sort of 30s, 40s, 50s, and onward. Find a project that somehow excites me, and then figure out how to rework it sort of so it feels like it's my own, maybe throwing in some modern materials or techniques or tools that weren't necessarily available to the author at the time of publication. And so I stumbled upon a great book from 1945 that was all about crepe paper florals, and it was sort of half crepe paper florals and half about like decorating with crepe paper, you know, because it was sort of at the time, it was this really sort of revolutionary material because it's malleable, you can shape it and it maintains its hold. So people made costumes out of it. They decorated booths for the school homecoming, you know?
Yeah, crepe paper, it's really like what you would use in a party, right? Where you're decorating
right.
with streamers,
so
but a little bit thicker.
That's what we're familiar with is the streamers that you might get in any sort of party store. Crepe also came in folds, so it's these longer sheets that were folded up, and you could lay it out almost like you would a bolt of fabric, and you could cut it to sort of, you know, fit whatever your project was. And I think at the time, you know, economics being what they were, fresh flowers were harder to come by, crepe paper was really inexpensive, and so it became this thing. And we've seen sort of in the craft and maker world over the last couple of years sort of a resurgence in interest in that. But it was really that vintage book that kind of like got me interested in it. So I started exploring it.
And was this when you were in school or this is already after?
No, this is post-school. Yeah. I mean, paper's one of those. I think it's really sort of a gateway craft material for so many people. Because in elementary school, you sit down and you're handed a stack of construction paper.
Yeah.
And I love construction paper. It's like it's cheap, it's malleable, it's you don't have to worry about perfection with it because you've got a stack of it. So I think for a lot of people it feels very approachable. And I think that's how it was for me. Yeah.
Well, and when you were doing, I think it's interesting that you say in art school, because I did an outside concentration. There was no minor. But I was going to go into the profitable field of advertising.
Okay.
That
was
my...
Which actually is much more profitable.
But I found that the sensibility wasn't a good match for me, aside from the graphic design side. But I always imagined, you know, how great it would be to be in the art school and that I wouldn't have any limits placed upon me, because the minute you enter school, you're going full throttle on making a decision, which really at that age, no one should be making a decision, first of all, about many things. So that should not be happening. And then you would think, when I did my concentration, I did ceramic, I did sculpture, I did drawing, and I did black and white photography.
Okay.
And I loved that I could explore all of those, but I was never in it long enough for them to say you have to narrow it down.
Right.
So that's interesting that within the creative space, they're already trying to get you to narrow it down.
Yeah.
Because this is continually, I was sharing with you before we went on camera, this is a question that's continually asked of me, because in some ways, you're inspiring me today to accept myself as a generalist also. People are asking me how I have so many ideas, how do I do all these things? It's because I have an interest in them.
Yeah.
I don't really want to box myself in. One feeds the other.
Yeah.
And people are constantly stressed, though, about not being able to choose, even if it's not necessarily their profession.
Yeah.
So when you accepted it, how did that come about for you?
It's still a constant internal struggle to
Is
a
it
certain
really?
Extent. Like, I can accept that I'm good at a lot of different sort of genres within sort of the field of making. And there are areas that I'm better at. I don't necessarily feel like I'm a master of many of them, but I can do most of them well enough. But, you know, there's part of me that really inside just kind of wants to like... And I think this is more sort of an issue where I need to talk myself into a project, that isn't a quick project. Maybe it's something that's really got some length to it. You know, maybe that's a quilting project or something that really is not a fast craft, and just accept that that's my craft for the next month or something
that,
and really kind of like put the time and energy into it and keep myself focused long enough to complete that without going all sort of, you know, fragmented and looking in other directions. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so
it's an issue of concentration.
It's like deliberate focus.
Yeah.
Well, that I would feel similar in that way. But then,
yeah.
Well, as I'm asking you this question, you know, you work for yourself, you
yeah.
support yourself doing anything from video, you teach
yeah.
people how to enjoy all of these various
right.
mediums. You are designing stationery
right.
for a company called Knock Knock,
yeah.
so your work is out there. You have all of these arms going, which from all these interviews I do, that's what everyone, pretty much everybody has that happening.
Yeah.
So in a way, being a generalist, I think, serves being an entrepreneur. But I don't know, what do you think? And is, because it sometimes is a necessary means to making all the eggs
yeah.
in your basket equal up to
yeah.
what will financially support you.
And I think that might be one of the issues with my concentration level, is because I really am thinking in the back of my head, like, at the end of the day, I have to monetize this to a certain extent. And maybe it's a question of sort of separating, maybe there's a personal project that I can continue on a long-term basis and allow myself to do that, but at the same time really focusing on the projects that are going to pay my rent and my bills every month, because, you know, obviously we all have to do that. And I've sort of chosen this path, and I'm grateful for it, because I certainly never get bored. I mean, it's always something new. And as everyone always says, it's always, you know, it's feast or famine. You're either like hustling to find the next project, or you're drowning in deadlines, sort of thing. So I think that does sort of play into sort of that mindset about, like, I can't really concentrate long enough to finish a long-term project. But it's because I'm doing a video tutorial, or I'm
right.
finishing up a product design deadline or something along those lines. Yeah.
Yep. No, it's, I mean, how do you manage that? The ups and the downs of this chosen profession.
Oh, I wish I had a really good answer to that. I think I've learned to manage it better with age. And when I say manage it, it's really, a lot of it's managing my own anxiety.
Yeah.
And I'm 100% honest.
No, I am now meditating. I really
yeah.
am.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like,
yes, and a glass of wine is really helpful.
Right? I mean, I've learned, I'm in my mid-40s now, and I'm learning sort of like what my triggers are, what are the best things to sort of put me in a good frame of mind. It could be as simple as, you really just need deep breakfast.
Oh, yeah, those things are important.
And you're going to have a different mindset in a half hour. Like, but it's that self-awareness, you know, getting to that point.
Sleep is good. I hear sleep is good.
Sleep is so good. Yeah, I highly recommend it.
And water.
Yes,
water is also
right?
good. Hydration.
All those basic things that I think when you're an entrepreneur and you're really hustling to get stuff done, you can tend to overlook.
You do.
You know, you get so in the zone working on your project, and you look at the clock and like 8 hours have passed and you have not moved from your desk. So I think for me, it's being mindful of like getting away from my computer every so often, or, you know, being conscientious about giving myself field trips during the week for a little bit of visual inspiration.
What would be a good example of that?
This last week I went with a friend to see the Chagall exhibition at LACMA that's all about his costuming. Which I didn't even realize that. I was fully aware that he had done costuming for ballet and opera, and it's an amazing exhibition. So I think it's, you know, it's giving yourself those opportunities to get outside of your head, and allow yourself to be exposed to someone else's creative world. And it allows you then to kind of come back and sit down with maybe a little bit more of a re-energized sense of purpose, and yeah.
So you're good at making time for that.
I'm trying to be good at making time for that. I'm not always successful, but, you know, I frame it in the terms of a field trip, you know,
mm-hmm.
so I allot myself a little field trip to kind of get
out. Or the artist date that I think Julia Cameron made so
yeah.
popular.
I love
yeah.
that idea.
It is. It really It is very important. Mm-hmm. It's all the same thing, though, where you're just... And if you're you do a lot of collaborations with other people and designers and video, and when you're on other people's deadlines, too, there
it feels extra pressure.
Right.
You want to show up for them. Or most people want to show up for people.
Yeah, yeah.
And it would seem even harder. But when I've traveled, which I know you just did too, you got to see the Northern Lights.
I did. We went to Norway for a little more than a week.
Well, when you take that moment and do it and, you know, invest in it, it's incredible what comes out of that.
Absolutely.
And how it's invaluable. Yeah. It really is. And we do live and work in LA, and we have all of this available to us. We have these exhibitions, or your studio is above the last bookstore, which I finally made it to.
Oh, you did. Oh, good, good.
And it's great. Yeah. I mean, you just walk in and it has this complete vibe and feeling to it.
Yeah.
Well, and then that brings me to the vintage books, and how were you first introduced to that? Is that something that since you're small, you've just been drawn to a certain time period, or?
Well, I think... It was funny, growing up in our house, like, I was interested in arts and crafts from an early age, which sort of made me an anomaly in my household. I mean, I think parents expected to a certain extent as it's part of your school day, you know, oh, you did an art project at school today, but I kind of wanted more of it, you know, so I did after school ceramics classes or that sort of thing. But the art books that we had in our house that I had access to, I think there was a book on Norman Rockwell. So there was Norman Rockwell paintings.
Is this in Michigan?
I grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Yeah. And then I had the Make and Do volume of the Childcraft Encyclopedia, which I just completely consumed. I think I did every project in it.
You did.
And it was everything from making fudge, which if you ever see that recipe, it's horrible, to paper mache, to... sculpting with clay, and it just was, I loved that, and it really just sort of fed my interest in, oh my God, there's this world inside of this book that I really want to tap into. So I think it was natural to sort of explore that further. So I was one of those kids that spent so much time in the library as a kid just because it was comforting to me and it was enlightening, you know? You know, aside from the craft books, like I read voraciously, and I was all about pre-Harry Potter. It was Chronicles of Narnia.
I remember that, yeah.
And I had that 7-volume set, and I think I read through it like 9 times over. You know, I'd finish the last book and start over with the first one just because I loved that world. So, anyways, I think as I grew up, one of the things, because I had this sort of affinity for just sort of a vintage aesthetic or pre-loved things. I don't know. It was there. So I would go to swap meets on Sunday mornings, and it's kind of, you know, been a religious ritual of sorts that I've done off and on over the years. So I just started picking up volumes of like old craft books when I was doing that and kind of adding them to my little collection. That's sort of how it started.
Really? Yeah. Since you were a kid, or this is more teenage years?
This is probably teen years on.
So did you feel supported in that, or you were saying in your household it wasn't necessarily arts, or did your parents introduce you?
I think that my parents, they did not discourage any of it, and I think that they were proud of the fact that I was a good student. That was kind of an area that I was able to excel. I mean, it's funny with all of my siblings. We all kind of had roles that we fit into during, you know, that brief period of time when we were all living at home. You know, I had a brother that was much better at athletics, and that's really where he excelled. And I have one sister, and she was the only girl. So that was kind of a realm unto itself, you know. And then my youngest brother, who's the baby, well, he just gets to do whatever he wants. I love you, Scott. So, you know. But yeah, I think that they encouraged it as much as they could understand it, you know. And we never had tough conversations when I told them I wanted to major in art. Like, they let me do it, God bless them. They may have been terrified behind the scenes, but I didn't know it. And when I did graduate and get a job within my field, I'm sure that there was a collective sigh of relief.
What was your first job?
When I finished at USC, and I had been studying art history, and I actually started as an apprentice with a woman who was an appraiser of modern and contemporary artwork.
Oh, wow.
In Los Angeles. And I apprenticed with her for 7 years, then got all of my credentials, sort of my testing out of the way, and I worked in that field for a total of 13.
You did?
Yeah. So it's kind of my first career,
yes,
if you will. Yeah.
And how I first came to know you was Mahara Dry Goods.
Right.
And entering online and just looking at your shop, and I think I was like, oh, I'd really love to, like, submit something to you.
Yeah.
And it was in the we call it maybe now the Etsy heyday time.
Yeah.
But what was the transition into that? Was that your first venture by yourself?
That's why I left the appraisal world.
You did.
Kind of had become enamored of it. Etsy launched in 2005. And it was just that period of time when e-commerce and the craft world were sort of beginning to find one another, and it started to make sense. And that was really exciting. And I was like, oh my God, I can make stuff and put it out there, and people all over the world will find it, kind of idea. It actually started in earnest because the only real crafty person in my sort of extended family was a great aunt on my father's side, who I adored. And she and her six girls quilted and crocheted. And so for everyone in the immediate and extended family, they received a crazy quilt and an afghan kind of thing, which I really loved. And when my sister was expecting her first child, which was going to be the first grandchild in our immediate family, this aunt was elderly and she was no longer able to, you know, do crafts of that scale. And I really wanted to continue on that tradition. So I started looking online, and I'm like, there's got to be somebody out there. And lo and behold, I found this little old lady in Auburn, Kansas, who had a horrible website, but the pictures made it look like her work was really meticulous. Like, it was just beautiful. And so just sort of on a whim, I emailed her, and I said, hey, this is the situation. I would like to be able to sort of, I didn't use the term at the time because I probably didn't have the language. I wanted to art direct it. But I wanted to pick out the pattern and the fabrics and send them to her, and she would construct it and send it back to me. And it came back, and it was brilliant. Like, I was so empowered by that sort of interaction. And I think that that is really what spurred me on then to do the Mahara Dry Goods site, because that then became a collaboration. In total, by the end of the five-year run of the shop, I had probably worked with about 50 different crafters, artisans, designers, to make this product line for children. And so I'm so grateful for that period of time because it was such a passion project for me. I really was so invested in it. It was the first time I'd really sort of spread my entrepreneurial wings, and it really grounded me in this community that I love so much. It's how I met so many people that I still am friendly with or work with today. So, yeah.
Yeah, it feels like a lot of us came up together,
yeah,
or grew up together
100%.
In a certain environment that,
yeah,
we still, I often say, we still aren't far enough away from it to fully see it.
Yeah.
But it would be like Renegade Craft Fair,
yeah,
and people who were selling on Etsy in the,
yeah,
beginning. And just, it did feel like a unique time where there was so much excitement and genuine appreciation,
yeah,
for something crafted.
100%.
And the quality was amazing, too.
Yeah. Between those craft fairs, like Renegade or Bazaar Bazaar or Felt Club, all these were all sort of like regional. And, you know, blogging was really kind of in its infancy, but it was an amazing time because you would discover a blog of someone doing something amazing like thousands of miles away, and you started to find your people and kind of create this, this web almost that kind of spread around the globe. That we didn't have access to before. So I think all of us that kind of became aware of one another during that time, there is sort of a kind of a bonding
a
or
bond.
A kinship. Yeah, for sure. Sounds like an old war story or something.
Because we're generalists.
Yeah. So.
Well, I'm curious, we're talking about, you know, the bond we have. I'm going to fast forward and say, where is it all going now, Robert? Because it's already shifted immensely from that time. And I didn't think I would be a person who would be longing for the good old days.
Right.
I really do. I intentionally try to stay present, because that'll happen your whole life, like a certain amount of nostalgia.
Yeah.
And you've got to keep moving forward, especially as an entrepreneur. But I really do wonder, and yeah. I miss a lot about that time, and hadn't even been in it long enough or old enough to realize how special it was.
Yeah.
I don't know if you agree.
I think that it's natural to have some nostalgia for that, because A, it's when we were all discovering this world, and B, it was just simpler.
And that means everyone discovering this world.
Yeah,
right?
It was far less complicated. There were far fewer social media platforms. I mean, back then, aside from your blog, if it was on WordPress, Press or Blogger or whatever
Typepad.
And then there was Flickr, which was a big deal.
Yes.
You know, where you stored your photos, but you could also interact with people. But you know, we didn't have Instagram, we didn't have Snapchat, we didn't have Twitter, we didn't have
Facebook.
Any of those.
Yeah.
And I think that as it's progressed forward, it's created a lot of noise. And it's harder for us to sort of like focus in on, you know, the one or two things that we need to focus on to sort of like move us forward in, you know, our creative practice or our professional career sort of thing. So it totally makes sense to be nostalgic for that. Where it's going, I think it's just going to get noisier, quite honestly. I think that we'll probably see waves of sort of tech rejection, and I think you sort of see that in some sort of hipster movements and that sort of thing, or even in the you see a lot of people that are taking interest in sort of doing what are traditionally seen as blue collar careers, but doing them with a new eye, with a new sense of refinement and purpose.
Well, like carpentry or...
Or people like wanting to be like artisanal butchers or, you know, that kind of thing. And I don't mean to... I'm not mocking it by doing the air quotes.
No.
But
well,
that's something that's new.
Artisanal,
like,
yes. Even just cocktails and...
Exactly. I mean, you know...
Well, it's coming back to a certain slow food movement and
right.
just really valuing... qualities that feel like they're getting completely lost with the noise.
And I think on one hand, that's great, and I would love to see, I always talk with my friend Kathy Callahan about a slow craft movement, you know, just because we see with the onset of social media and even the little clips that they play on Facebook now, you see crafts that are done in 30 seconds, and it's ridiculous.
Because, because we don't have
the
attention
span. Technically cannot
span.
Happen. that's our viewing attention span. But I think people then in real life want to see these creative endeavors accomplished in a matter of a half hour or an hour, which some things can be. And if you need a quick fix and you just need to sit down and doodle and do something creative to sort of like restore something within yourself, great. But I think there's also that broader world of like being able to sit down and really learn a technique or a skill set or a craft and work at it over a longer period of time. So I think with this sort of, you know, what we're talking about with these like artisanal butcher, the artisanal cocktail maker, all of that sort of thing. I think that's good to a certain extent, but you know, everything always, the pendulum keeps swinging back and forth, and it can get to the point where it's sort of ridiculous.
Right.
And then it swings back and forth. So, yeah, so I think social media will continue to be loud and noisy, creating all of that static, and I think our reactions to it is probably just going to keep swinging back and forth.
But just faster, because our attention span is
like
limited.
Human nature. Yeah, that doesn't sound very hopeful, but I think that, you know, there's a place in there for everybody.
Yeah.
There's no crystal ball.
Well, I did just see yesterday a person who's an expert, well, I mean, many of us are experts in different things, but in social media, and I don't mean to mock either, but maybe I do. Because the thing is, in social media, it hasn't even been around long enough, or maybe it has. All right, never mind. So the thing I saw was, it said being offline is now the new luxury to your earlier point. But I think when I first entered the scene, I felt excited because I felt like that's what we were doing. We were, I had never sewn before until, well, I did start designing fabric, but there was this resurgence in handmade and wanting to come back to that already. And in some ways it feels like people are just so overloaded and overwhelmed with all the noise on many different fronts that they don't feel like they have that time. I mean, I've chosen to create this series myself in a slow, it's the slow interview series.
Sure.
Because I had people tell me, oh, well, people don't have that attention span. And I thought, but I do, I will answer my own wish. If it's a good conversation, I'm in, you know? And that, well, the nice thing is that you can actually make something sometimes when you're listening to those.
Yeah.
But maybe in some ways it's still finding, I think you just said it, it's like there's room for all of us.
Yeah.
And maybe rather than it all being one version, there are going to be lots of smaller movements within it.
Sure.
And we just find our community, because we can now, like that's a great thing.
Absolutely.
We just find our small communities within the global scale and we decide, you know.
I mean, listen, there's always going to be trends. There's always going to be movements within the community. I mean, in those early days, I think a lot of us looked at some of these crafts that we were making almost in an ironic sense. Like, you weren't crocheting to make, like, a cozy for your toaster. You were crocheting a monster or something sort of silly kind of thing. Where when you go to a craft fair now, to a large extent, it's become much more sincere. Like, you really see people that are into ceramics or into this weaving, or they're hand-dyeing fabrics and making beautiful clothing out of it, which is really reminiscent of what we saw in the 70s. So, you know, it's all of this... kind of, it's just the cyclical
repurposing.
Nature. Totally. So I think that's going to happen no matter what. I think it's, you know, it's beholden to us to sort of like find the area of focus that kind of keeps us happy and sane and fuels our passion. And, you know, it's fine to experiment with those other, you know, crafting trends that are going on. But, you know, at the same time, you're building a creative practice, which is sort of, you know, building up yourself at the same time as, like, learning to do something manually with your hands. So, all things balance. That's, you know, it's such an old adage, but it always sort of rings true, you know, when considering any of that.
Well, the other reason I was excited to talk to you and share some of your story in this fashion is that you've been in it, you've been in the game. Like, you're still in the game. And I think where I'm of entrepreneurship, so I'll have to have you pick up, but where I'm at, it's certainly something I appreciate, especially because we began at a time where I say, you know, people were pioneers in the online space.
Sure.
And nobody does have any answers of how it's shaking out because it's really still in development.
Yeah.
And so I wish, I always say, oh, I wish I had mentors, which I had some really wonderful people guide me in the beginning stages, but none of us can guide at this stage. Maybe now some of us who've been in it can facilitate things for people coming up, but it changes so quickly.
Yeah.
My big question is, how does one sustain? Like, how have you made it this long to reinvent and become different things? Because you ran that for 5 years.
I did.
And was it a shift in the marketplace that stopped, or you realized no, you're ready to focus on something else?
It was a shift in the marketplace, but it also ended up being a new career trajectory for me, which in retrospect I'm really grateful for. I wasn't at the time. You know, the Great Recession of 2008 I think was hard on so many of us
as
entrepreneurs. And I loved my online shop so much that I really just dug my claws in, and I hung on probably 2 years longer than I should have. And I was very sort of defeated when I finally came to the conclusion that I have to let go of this endeavor that I've put so much energy into and kind of find my next path. And so...
That must have been a really difficult decision.
It was devastating. I was really so sort of just shattered over the whole thing.
Also because you were working with many other people.
That I loved so much. I loved this little family that I had built, and it felt very communal to me. So, you know, I came to that conclusion about the same time that a long-term relationship was coming to an end. So I was really just in this dark place, and I didn't really know creatively where to go next. And so just as sort of a means of survival, I took a job at a paper source store. They were just opening up in Santa Monica. So I helped open the store, and I had never worked corporate before. So that was a whole mind-numbing, mind-expanding experience, which I always say that I never worked so hard for so little money.
Even more than working for yourself, or maybe you were good and profitable.
Very different way, where I had to show up someplace at a certain time, and I had a very long list of tasks and a certain language that I had to adopt. And and when you're working retail, obviously you're always on, you know, because you're managing coworkers or you're assisting customers, and there are a lot of demands that are put on you. Yeah, but I have to say, I met the most amazing people doing that job, which I am forever grateful for, because one of those colleagues was my introduction to the world of video. She introduced me to the company that I've worked with, Kin Community, now off and on for the last about 5 years doing video work. And that was huge for me because it gave me a new direction. It was still creative. Mm-hmm. And it actually gave me this platform that allowed me, in my generalist mind, to explore all of these different types of projects and somehow condense them down into something succinct and teach them, which I'm so appreciative of that. I think the ability to sort of like take something that seems overwhelming and just sort of condense it down to these understandable bite-sized pieces is such an art form, and I'm really grateful for them for showing me sort of how to do that. And then one of my other coworkers at PaperSource ended up being an editor at Knock Knock. And so that's how that introduction happened, which is how I started doing product design for them. So I think even in that sort of seemingly dark time in my life, you know, really good things happened. I just couldn't see it at the time. And I think that's often the case when you're trudging through something that's heavy, you know. But yeah, it opened a lot of doors for me, just being willing to kind of get in there and just do some monotonous daily work.
For someone else, because I wonder what that transition would feel like of building, having, you know, managing, collaborating, but it's all you.
Right.
And then transitioning into a very structured environment for someone else.
I mean, I think by nature, I'm a little bit of a people pleaser, so in a certain sense, when you hand me a rule book like I was handed going into retail, I want to consume that and I want to do a good job. And so I really push to kind of, you know, still do good work. But it was hard. It was really hard. And yeah, a good point. I mean, not working for myself. I think on one hand, at that time, I was so tired and ready for a change. There was a little bit of relief there that I didn't have to answer to myself.
Or figure out where your next source of income is coming.
Exactly.
I mean,
it was nice to collect a paycheck. And honest to God, I still have those moments, like, you know, every 6 months where I'm like, what am I doing? I really should get myself a full-time job with benefits. And, you know, I don't have to take my work home after hours, that kind of thing. Because, you know, when you're doing the independent contractor work or the freelance work, however you want to phrase it, your mind's going 24/7 and you can exhaust yourself. And I think that's really where, when we were talking about like managing anxiety and managing, it's a lot of it's about managing your time and just really realizing like, okay, I've got to carve out this little bit of time where I get out of my own space and my own head and go do something that exposes me to someone else's creativity, just for, you know, mental health reasons, honestly.
Well, and I think part of my passion in doing something like this is that many times when we've gotten together with friends and having other people in it with you completely grounds me just to say, oh, great, yes, I understand all that. And we all go through these similar things and it just gives me great comfort, which is like the desire to share more of that out there, because I was telling you, even listening to people's stories I don't know.
Yeah.
Because there is, I don't think I've ever mentioned it on the series, but in Germany, my aunt would talk about the red thread. Mm. And I even made a fabric line with this concept of when you look in when you have hindsight, you look back on your life, you see how that thread, there's always one thread that runs through, and how it connects everything.
Yeah.
And I do, without sounding trite, but I do think like that's a magic of life.
It is.
I think that is a really beautiful thing. And when you are able to, even within darker times, recognize it, mm-hmm. it's just, it's like, I find now I believe in it more, so I keep my eyes open, and I just pay attention to what's going on. And every person I meet, I wonder, like, am I gonna have a conversation with them 10 years from now?
Right.
Or, you know, I was just telling you how I taught at the Squam retreat and meeting an entirely new circle of artisans that I was visual arts, they were fiber arts or doing sewing. It just opened me into fabric design.
Yeah.
But I couldn't have anticipated that. I couldn't have connected those dots.
So it's sort of this through line in
your story. It's a through line.
Yeah, I love that.
Of seeing it. Because, yes, as you're sitting here, it also helps. I heard this recently, too. I'm trying to think of where. Oh, I think it was Seth Godin, Poke the Box. I'm finally listening to his audiobook. And he said the amount of failure that happens to everyone, and especially people that we might know really well. He even uses Oprah as an example. They're just willing to begin again and again and again and again. And so knowing that is just normal.
Yeah.
But then beginning again and then just allowing each piece to fit into the next piece. I mean, some things aren't necessarily meant to run a lifetime.
Yeah.
Whether that would even be personally a relationship,
yeah,
or a business, you know, it's just it's a comforting thought again,
yeah,
because I think the drawback of all that we see is the potential overwhelm,
sure,
that people feel, and the fact that they think a craft can be done in a second, and they think a business can be built in a minute,
right,
a year. No, that's probably too long, like 6 months or a month. They really do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's, we're getting skewed in how we see all of this.
Yeah.
And that's why I think, again, it's important to just be,
yeah,
able to say, let's think of about this different in a different way.
Yeah.
Because we do have different choices now.
Well, and I think your point about, you know, some things just aren't meant to last a lifetime. I'm such a big believer in more than one career in a lifetime. And I think, you know, when you're asking me, like, how I've been able to do this sort of as sort of an independent contractor or a freelance, I think it's being open to that. And it's not always by choice. I mean, the decision to close the Mahar Dry Goods Shop was a torturous one, but it was a necessary one. But it kind of led me onto Paper Source then, which kind of opened up the door for the video work. And the video work has been great, but it's not a full-time gig for me. It's very cyclical. I probably do them at this point every maybe 6 months. I'll come back and do a series of them. So it necessitates that you diversify. And I think as a creative entrepreneur, that's so important.
I think it's really important.
Because unless you have somehow tapped into that, you know, creative maker jackpot, you've got to have multiple income streams coming, mm-hmm, in. You know, so for me, when I'm kind of looking at the big picture, you know, I've got the video work that I'm doing. I've got some of the product design work that I'm doing. I still maintain sort of a retail-like job 3 days a week. We were talking about this, where I do order fulfillment for a local creative company. You know, and then that also leaves room then for other opportunities to present themselves. Like sometimes I'll do is like production design for a web series, or I've got some event planners that have me in their Rolodex, and every 6 months I might hear from them to like, please do a big floral wall for an upcoming bat mitzvah or something like that. You know, but without all of those, I would have to get a sort of more, I don't know what you want to call it. I don't want to say normal, because a normal job is, I don't think that exists,
just,
but,
yeah,
you know, more of a job where I'm reporting in to a specific location X number of hours a week kind of thing. And I'm still open to that if that's where things lead. But at this point, I've kind of been able to juggle all of that.
Well, one of the early mentors I did have, I just will never forget, she said, the way you sleep at night is you need to have many eggs in your basket. Yeah. And they need to be artisanal eggs.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and it's one of those things too, like one of the things I'm trying to get better about is planning several months down the road. And sometimes just planting a seed with somebody for something that may or may not happen, but if it does, that'd be awesome, mm-hmm. kind of idea. You know, and just doing my best to like follow up with people I've worked with in the past. Hey, do you want to book something like in the spring, if it's, you know, if I'm currently in the fall, that sort of idea. So just, you know, being mindful of keeping the flow going.
Well, and I'm really trying to figure out and advise people, like, figure out your passive income source as soon as you possibly can.
Yeah.
So that, well, if anything comes up in your life, you have some cushion or...
Yeah.
You know, I don't think you're so busy getting something off the ground at any given moment that you're not thinking about having that source.
And this is exactly something I wish somebody would have told me when I first started my online shop.
Yeah.
It was so enthusiastic, but I had never done anything really entrepreneurial aside from like a lemonade stand as a kid, you know?
Oh yeah,
so,
I did one of those too.
I quit my lucrative full-time job cold and I jumped in with both feet. Which had its benefits because I just, you know, I was operating on wild enthusiasm and it propelled me to a certain extent. It would have been so valuable had I maybe gone down to part-time with my job and mm-hmm. kept that sort of income stream going because, A, starting a business costs a lot of money. Yeah. Maintaining a business can cost a lot of money.
Had you saved a lot to be able to do it until it went? Or
I had savings and I had credit cards.
I have those too.
Yeah, had is the operative word. Yeah, I try not to live on credit anymore just because, you know, I really sort of shot myself in the foot by, you know, paying for web services and kind of upkeep stuff on those cards and just building up debt that didn't really need to be there if I had sort of done some pre-planning. So.
Well, but these are all things that sometimes you wish that you know and you definitely can't predict how it's going to shake out.
No.
And then there is just the element of adventure.
Yeah.
And just the excitement of that. And
sure.
At certain times in your life, you're like, yes, I just have the endless energy to do it. But yes, I'm saying it out there. Like everybody should figure that out as best they can.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can't know what that is until you get your business going.
Yeah.
But it's definitely an important element to have something.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to do glittering generalities, and I also don't want to be the old man sort of like shaking his finger. But I think it's something important to think about. At least consider. We'll say that.
I think it's exciting to think about. Like, for me now, I'm like, oh, it's really exciting for me to figure that out.
Yeah.
For me to keep going, to really support the generalist in me that wants to continually explore and try new things and maybe be at the beginning of certain movements that aren't yet generating revenue,
right.
You know, having that vision, I just want to be able to support that. Mm-hmm. Or even being able to paint in a way that may not be as commercial at first or even ever. But these are all, they're certainly all desires that get born out of experience.
Yeah.
And so you just know when you know, and if it's helpful for people to know now, then good. I mean, I think that's one of the questions that I do like to ask is if someone were starting a venture now, what would you advise them or what comes to mind?
I would, obviously if you're looking to start a venture, you're inspired by something, you know? And start sort of like tapping into what exactly those inspirations are. It's sort of like when you go to maybe design a website for the first time, a really good exercise is to get online and really sort of narrow down other websites that you think are beautiful. They work well, they're aesthetically pleasing, you enjoy spending time on them. So you're kind of, you know, you're sort of identifying what your influence is. Oftentimes, if it's a person, get to know that person, you know? And it doesn't have to be in a stalkery sort of way. You can just say, hey, I'm starting this venture. Could I have a half hour of your time? Can I buy you a cup of coffee or a drink kind of thing? So it's sort of you starting to build a network of people perhaps that have done what you want to do, so you've got someone that you can maybe rely on for a little bit of advice. You don't want to be too heavy-handed with that. Not everybody's always receptive to it. So it's just kind of using some good common sense discretion. But I really think that's important, you know, because if you want to be successful in whatever the new venture is, you know, you want to create a little bit of structure and framework in your head. You know, you want to know what your influences are so that you can really focus in on what you want to take from those influences, what you're bringing to it, to the table, that's uniquely yours, so you've got something imaginative, creative, and unique that's going to propel you forward, that the marketplace will accept. And aside from that, having this sort of like network of support, whether it's friends that are in the same boat as you are, or people that you can consider mentors that you can call up and say, hey, I don't know what to do with X, Y, or Z. How do I maneuver in that space? So I think those are two sort of important things.
They are, and I heard really great advice on the reaching out to people, and two people mentioned this that are really well known, and that is to consider how you are of service, mm-hmm. even to the other person. So approaching them, thinking about how can you help them with something.
I like that.
And yeah. You know, that one of them was, I didn't even know who Jimmy Iovine is. Do you know who he is?
No.
He's a producer responsible for so much of the music that we know.
Okay.
In all realms, like from, I think, the Beatles in the beginning to then he partnered with Dr. Dre.
Yeah.
And most recently, they have a great documentary on HBO. It's like a 4-part series. But they created Beats together,
okay.
and then sold it to Apple. And now he's like in his... Oh, I think you were saying, I wonder if it was before we paused, having multiple careers.
Yeah.
Now he's in this whole other element of trying to figure out the space and getting
sure.
people to listen to Apple Music. But in his interview that I heard, his one piece of advice was constantly be of service.
That's service. Excellent.
And I think I love it too. And even being established and still being of service,
yeah.
and just keeping that mindset, because sometimes it does feel like, you know, we live in a time where it is overnight success and people expect everything delivered to them,
mm-hmm.
but how can we think about it
yeah.
in a different way?
100%. And I think that's a much more organic and authentic way to connect with
mm-hmm.
someone, is to really get in the trenches and work with them.
Yeah.
You know? You know, so it is, if there is someone that's doing what you want to do, you know, maybe you're looking for volunteer opportunities. Maybe you're offering your services on some sort of entry level. I think, you know, just to get your foot in the door, build a rapport, show them you can do good work. And I think that's going to build some mutual respect. So they'll be then more willing to sort of, you know, dole out advice when you need it.
Yeah.
You know?
Or like just being of support of their product
yeah.
or their services.
Totally.
You know, that's
yeah.
like, that's a wonderful feeling when you reach out to someone and want to know them better. And you're also just supporting them
yeah.
like financially or contributing in some way.
One of the things that I love so much about the craft and maker community, because I feel like there is so much collegiality and a willingness to promote one another's
yeah.
endeavors. And I'm not saying that that's across the board or it's 100% consistent, but I've seen it more in this community than
Me
I
too.
Have in any other realm that I've worked.
Yes.
And, you know, just even people that I don't know necessarily on Instagram, if I think they're doing something amazing, maybe I'll regram it and say something lovely about what it is they're doing. And it just kind of, you know, it builds that bridge that wasn't there before. And I think that's so valuable.
I love that you bring it up, because the same thing just occurred to me, where I was witnessing an exchange where it felt like one person wasn't supporting a new person beginning something. And this is like on a much bigger stage on television.
Yeah.
So this is just my perspective, but I thought about how much it's ingrained in us. It just is that if I can support you and I'm, the only reason I wouldn't is if I'm so bogged down on my own survival.
Yeah.
But at times it feels like that. But thinking in that way of how we all helped each other,
yeah.
that might have even just been as simple as blogging and making a point to link to somebody.
Yeah.
and that conscientiousness has carried on in social media, and I do really love to see it because I don't think that it's present everywhere. Yeah. And that bond that we have, or I hope there's a willingness that we're also offering it to other people yeah. as they come, it is a really nice quality.
Yeah. Totally agree.
The one thought when you're saying, you know, another good point that you're making too is to my friend I spoke to yesterday said, you've always got to have the next thing ready before the other thing ends.
Yeah.
And I think, again, like to the point of passive income, you're just so into the one thing, you may not even have the time or resources yeah. to be able to be yeah. out ahead. But like you, I was saying, like after shooting 12 of these, maybe, hopefully this turns out, but I'm finally learning 10 years in to treat my business a little bit like an editorial, like a publication, or someone who exhibits at trade shows all the time, mm-hmm. where they're thinking of Christmas in the Christmas before, like a year ahead of time, and truly being more of a planner in that way.
Yeah.
I'm fairly organized, but it's a different skill set.
It is. And it's not always attainable, but it's a good right. thing to aspire to, for sure.
Yeah. Well, and the other one is assistance. Do you have someone help you with anything? I know.
Very rarely. If I get a large sort of...
Says the woman who just had you help me film this.
No, it's all good. I mean, if I am fortunate enough to get sort of a large scale production job, and when I say production, maybe I'm making something where I've got it, there's a repetitive element to it, and the budget allows, I'll definitely try and bring in a friend or someone that can, like, I can pay to sit with me for a day or two and just help me slog through some of the sort of like repetitive mundane elements of creating whatever it is that we're creating. No, it's really a one-man show at the moment, by and large. I don't relish the idea of having to manage other people. I can do it, and I can do it well, but it's not necessarily something I enjoy. And I realize, if one of the dozen things I've got going on takes off, that maybe that will become a necessity. Knock on wood, that would be such a good problem. But yeah, not at the moment.
Yeah, that's something that I'm delving into, and I can see how my desire to do so much myself, or just feeling like I don't have the budget for it, really ended up closing in on me. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things that I feel passionate about, and I'm still figuring it out, because to your point as well, early on you decide what kind of business, or really what kind of life do I want? Yeah. And then everything that I'm choosing to put my energy into, is that fit into that picture? Mm-hmm. Where are you going to be a lifestyle business, or are you going to try to grow it to a team and, you know, be in every store possible, right. or as yeah, an example. Exactly. But those are very deliberate choices. I mean, some people get in and they let it take them, and that's an adventure too.
Yeah.
But I learned early on to be making those choices. And
yeah.
So if you envision where you're headed, do you love all of this and then more?
I mean, for as much as I have going on, it's still not as lucrative as I'd like it to be. And I don't say that in a greedy sense. I mean, Los Angeles is an expensive place to live.
Yeah.
And I'd like to be able to relax a little bit on the hustle. I mean, I think that's everybody's goal, is you sort of, you know, kind of get a little bit older and a little bit wiser and a little bit more advanced in whatever your career is. So I really love the product design that I'm doing now. It's been a joy to work with a company that has a marketing department and a sales department, and I don't have to wear those hats myself, because I'm so used to being in that mindset from mm-hmm. the early days. That I just, I know that,
that
I've
would
gotta
be a luxury.
I've got to be everything to everybody. You know, I've got to do the customer service, and I've got to do the order fulfillment, and I've got to do the product design and the packaging, and that's a little overwhelming. So I have really enjoyed that experience, quite honestly. It has felt like a luxury. Would I love to see more of that? 100%. I think it's been such a joy just to be able to focus in on the design. And I've also been really fortunate at Knock Knock to work with a really smart team of people who are generous, and when there is criticism, it's constructive, and it ends up sort of pointing me in a better direction. And it's also valuable to say, like, they'll have the sales team come in and talk to me, and they'll be like, you know, they know their customer base the best, and so they can tell me, you know, like, this demographic really, as silly as it might seem, maybe won't buy something in that color, or won't buy something that has more than X number of steps to complete a project. As a designer, that's super valuable to me, so I'm trying to internalize that and help it, you know, make me a better designer. So, yes, I would love to do more of that. The video work, I totally love. I just, you know, for me, it's like we've talked about, has afforded me the opportunity to put my hands in so many different types of projects, learn something, master them to a certain extent, and then move on to the next one. And somehow in my head, that's like a wonderful thing. It really is. So, you know, I've got some good projects up my sleeve in that regard. And, you know, I've enjoyed doing it for the web community on a platform like YouTube, which is so egalitarian and seen by people all over the world. I also think it might be fun to maybe take it up a notch to something that's maybe a little bit more polished with a bigger budget. You know, that'd be awesome too. So I see those two areas as something that I would love to continue focusing on for sure.
I'm excited for you.
Me too. Let's make it happen.
We'll like put fairy dust
please,
on this and get it out
send
there.
Send all the good wishes. Yes.
Based upon everything we've shared, are there anything else that you would want to share that you, any other thoughts or?
No, I think other than sort of an appreciation for this kind of conversation, because I think this is really valuable. And again, you know, we keep talking about the good old days, which were really,
we're
what,
not
15
those people
years
leaning
ago?
Our rocking chairs.
But starting out, it's like, I didn't have access to podcasts or vlogs or any of that, where people were really sharing their passions in such an accessible way. So, and I think it's really good, especially if you're looking for a new career path, or you're looking to maybe just start something from scratch. It's such a good way to like get dirty and explore your options, you know? Because even though like I feel like I'm doing good things, you know, it's still pretty lean a lot of the time. You know, I'm not rolling in it, and I've still got stuff to learn. So hearing conversations like this that you have with other people, that other podcasters and bloggers have,
yeah.
I think it builds community, and I think it, you know, kind of all makes us a little better within our kind of creative bubble that we've made for ourselves.
Oh, so. Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
And
yeah,
seeing as how you're my closing, it's very well put, and it
thanks.
Inspires me to keep going, because I've been thankful for it too.
Cool.
And yeah, I just really, I love every minute of it. I think I was telling you, I really do. I feel
yeah.
so appreciative I get to
yeah.
do this as my life.
Which I think that's a cool sort of inner confirmation that you're doing what you should be doing.
Yes,
you know?
And the only part is when it, you know, feels like you are investing in something that isn't yet entering your bank account.
Yeah.
Like,
oh.
Even if that is collaborating.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I have a screenwriter who said, wow, the publishing world, huh? Like, I got a little advance, and then I'm waiting for sales.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just different modus operandi of all of this, but that part gets frustrating or scary.
Yeah.
And again, yes, we're living in Los Angeles. I really want people to find a sense of comfort in knowing all elements of what it means to choose any versions of this life.
Sure.
And you said it so well too, like make it your own.
Yeah.
This is just my version, your version, whomever shares it. It's still always going to be your own based upon so many circumstances. But I just think, oh, if I can help someone feel less discomfort or just feel like they are part of a larger community, then awesome.
That's 100% a good thing.
That's all. Yeah. And now it is Prosecco time.
Woohoo! All
Thank right. you, Robert.
That was awesome. Thank you.
So good. I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Robert Mahar. And you can find all things Robert at Robert-Mahar.com and on Instagram at Robert_. So his website has a hyphen. Instagram has an underscore, Robert_Mahar. You can also follow him on Pinterest and Twitter, and be sure to check out his YouTube channel at youtube.com/craftedwithrobert. And don't forget, you can watch our entire conversation at my YouTube channel, youtube.com/creativethursday. You can find all things Creative Thursday at creativethursday.com and creativethursdaycourses.com. The Creative Thursday podcast is recorded and produced by me, Marisa, and I thank you so much for listening. Until next time, friends, have a beautiful creative week.